to switch it around.
Hey, James, how are you, buddy?
Good.
Good to see you.
You too. Nice to meet you too.
Nice place, man.
Hey, Mark, guess what, man? It actually worked. We're actually live right now.
So, already?
Except Pat's facing sideways.
Am I?
There you go. So, you know, something, it actually worked out. I can't believe this. We had problems with some technical problems the last few weeks with Facebook Live, but we're live a little early. We're live at like 3 minutes early.
So you got an Irish guy in there. That's why you got to look at the Irish.
If you guys don't mind that, we'll go on a little early. You can, Mark.
Yes, my contract states I don't start.
We're making big coin from our Patreon, man.
I'm putting it in for overtime. What time is it now? Set off.
I was happy for that.
I can't believe it works. So I'll keep my.
All right, so let's get started here. Since it's working, let's take advantage of it. My name is Mark DeMayo. I'm your host. This is Police Off the Cuff After Hours, my partner in all things law enforcement. The very handsome Bill Cannon is here with me tonight.
I'm so excited tonight. We have two amazing guests. One from 3,000 miles away in Dublin. You know, I think he has a Guinness on his desk. I can't see it, but he's got something.
I have one a day. So today I'm going to have a
Guinness guy. And Pat's probably got a Sambuca with three coffee beans and a snifter.
Let's introduce our guest. Our guest tonight, we have James Mooney. He's coming to us from Dublin.
From New York. I'm in New York.
Oh, you're in New York.
I'm here. I'm from Dublin originally.
Dublin, but yeah, he's in New York. Irish angel.
You know what? Listen, to tell you a little bit about James, he's a professional groomer to the stars, a stylist. You're probably wondering why would Police Off the Cuff have a stylist on the show? Well, the truth is...
my agent rang and they said, these guys need some haircuts just because of COVID. Yeah, so I'm trying to get extra work at the moment. The salon's closed.
I don't know what to do with my hair.
Some color for you.
What happened was that we had some professional people watching the show. They were, you know, I didn't want to tell Bill, but they were commenting on loose shirts and maybe they could put a little color in his hair, brighten it up a little bit. So what do you think, James? Can we do anything with him?
I got you. That's what I'm here for.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was a lost cause.
Pat is the most stylish guy, though. Pat's got that Italian haircut. You can see.
All right, let's introduce Pat. He's back. Pat Russo's back with us. He's a retired member of the service. And he's running the Cops and Kids Boxing, and he's here to talk to us about that. They're ready to open up their brand new location. I've seen pictures. It looks amazing. I actually want to go down there, Pat.
No, it's mandatory that you get there for the grand opening.
Okay, when is the grand opening?
It depends. Let's call Governor Cuomo after this.
Tell our audience about it again, one more time.
Well, it's a program that I started as a rookie cop. As part of the pilot precinct for community policing, where we met with the community and we listened to the community on what the most prevalent problems that were facing that community. At the time, it was Sunset Park, Brooklyn. And Sunset Park, like a lot of neighborhoods throughout New York City, and I'm sure throughout the world, I'm sure in Dublin, you have the same problems. Because we actually box against a couple of Dublin clubs once in a while.
The ones down in Sheriff Street, from Sheriff Street, Dublin Docklands Boxing.
Yeah, and speaking to the coaches there and the guard, the police department. It's basically the same problems that the at-risk kids really didn't have a place to go. To be around good, positive people. And when you're around good, positive people, you become a good, positive person.
I think it gives you structure as well. I think that's the beauty of it. I think it's like it has a very structured environment for them where they learn structure in their lives. By the time they got home, they've learned something new with what structure is all about. There's rules associated with what you do. If you don't, you get hurt.
Are you guys all right? Or do we need an Irish interpreter?
You might need one in an hour.
I can get one.
So Pat, you're opening up a new facility soon too. Obviously, you mentioned the fact that you know, you're waiting on Cuomo and everything's got to be clear with the COVID, but where is it?
Well, it's in the middle of Flatbush, Brooklyn. It's a perfect spot, centrally located. It's right by a train station. And it was a collaboration between the police department, which I'm a retired sergeant, and the New York City Cops and Kids Program, which is a not-for-profit program located within the city. And our landlord, who I guess is the business community, who gives us the place for with no charge, no utilities.
That's a wonderful thing he did. Who is this guy?
This guy is J.J. Bestricker.
Hey, what's the name?
J.J. Bestricker. And just a wonderful human being. He realized when they first purchased this big facility, and it's a major complex. It goes for probably 8 or 9 blocks in the middle of Brooklyn. He realized that he needed to do right by the community and to make this space available. And it's totally free for kids 12 to 21 years of age.
Is it near Liberty Avenue in Atlantic? No, it's not that one, right?
No, I'm familiar with that one also. That's Liberty in Pennsylvania. There's a big NYPD facility there. And I'm hoping, but I actually met personally with the PC, the police commissioner, this week, and we're looking to put a program into that facility. Ours currently is the only free program located in New York City. So I got kids traveling from up in Harlem, from the Bronx, just to travel in 2 hours just to train in our program.
I saw the pictures that you post, and it's very inspiring, and the place looks beautiful.
Well, the place is literally going to be spectacular, and we're going to take it to the next level now. It's not only going to be a boxing program. Boxing is going to always be the anchor, because boxing attracts those at-risk kids that want to be tough guys. But we're gonna expand it to include CrossFit training, Olympic weightlifting, yoga. And
do you have for Bill the Zumba? You got that?
we could add that.
The Zumba class of my life.
But for Bill,
we have
a home workout program. I know Bill's a professor.
I can help with homework.
But
I think I'm gonna recruit Bill.
It's just for up to 21, or can other people come too? And
12 to 21. We do have. Once the kids age out, the kids become volunteers, because I'm not going to put them in the street.
Are there any AA meetings available at these locations?
we could probably do that after hours.
Pat, it's a bit like Carney's community in London.
Yes.
Carney's doing amazing jobs. George Turner, who runs that, and Mark Reigate. I'm good friends with Mark Reigate. You know Mark, right?
Me?
What? No, Pat, he knows Mark Reigate.
I'm not sure who Mark is.
So Mark used to bring the kids over from Fitzroy Lodge in London to box. Mick Carney was his boss. Mick Carney ran Fitzroy Lodge from, it was basically the gym opened in 1908. Mick Carney took it over in the 60s.
I do know of him, yes.
Yeah, he used to bring kids over to the fight in the Police Athletic League against, or he used to set up bouts.
Yeah, I ended up boxing twice against the in London.
Oh, very good.
Against the Bobbies.
Were you 0-2?
I never forgot his name. Sean Doyle, wonderful, wonderful Bobby. He really gave me a beating in Atlantic City. He was 6'4" and I'm 5'10". I couldn't brush my hair a week after that bout, the lumps I had on my head.
I got a beating like that once too, but it was in a parking lot in Long Island.
Hey, why don't you tell us about some of the work you're doing with the kids in New York City?
Well, I mean, I don't know what I do with them, Bill. I just run around with them all day. I sort of do, I guess, social documentary through photography to try and understand what the kids are going through. I try and use photography as a tool for them to see what out there for them, so they can use it as a form of expression. Mm-hmm. I try and use it for other people to see and be educated of what goes on, so then they could either get involved to try and help. Like with, I done a program in Orange County Juvenile Hall in the prison there out in Los Angeles. Helped set up a fashion show inside the prison where the kids became the models, the actors, the producers. They put it all together with one woman who was the lead designer at ASICS, and she got involved with this woman, Crystal Anthony. An amazing woman. She used to work for the FBI for human trafficking, and she's still involved with it today. But she got me into the prison, and we had an idea, and we made it happen. And yeah, it was just incredible. The kids are like 14 to 17, and some were serving 25 to life.
James, can you get any of these celebrities to loosen up their pockets and start pulling out somebody's...
That'd be like going to Crown Heights and asking for a dollar. Doesn't happen that easy. They can sneeze on you quicker than giving you a dollar, but no.
Hey, can you give us a little backstory? I was reading your bio. So obviously you grew up in Dublin, but your brother was involved in styling, and then he got you in it?
So I saw what he was doing, because I used to do engineering. I used to cut metal on machines with lathes. I got kicked out of school at 14. I used to get into trouble, but not as bad as my brother. So my brother got into hairdressing, and he sort of came home with nice looking women and new clothes. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing wrong? So I ended up just choosing what he'd done instead and found an easier path. My wife always says to me, it's like, what do you do all day? You just go into work and you do this. Uh-huh. You can't even cut hair. So I was like, that's what I do. I get paid for doing that all day.
I used to want to cut hair. That's always been like a thing of mine.
It's a great way. Like what I learned about hairdressing is it's a great way to communicate. So it's like, you know, the way when you're at home and your wife is bawling you, she's like, you have to learn to switch off because she's always right. Yeah. So with hairdressing, it gives you those tools perfectly, because when you're doing hair over the hairdryer, you can't hear a word, but you know when to nod. Mm-hmm.
You're like a sober bartender in a way.
It's like sort of in a way. Yeah, like I only have one of these. Yeah.
Loves to talk to you when you can't talk back, right? You're like, oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know what? You do have real personal conversations with your stylist. You know, it's an hour to sit in the chair. Or
we never listen, though.
Oh, you never listen? Oh. But I always ask questions, too. You know, how you doing? Like, I don't just sit there and talk, but I ask I'm interested in how they're doing, too, so they get a chance to maybe.
My clients never ask me how I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I'm not an A-list celebrity yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, like my worlds are totally separate. I've got two different worlds that I live in. Bill knows I live in one world and then I got another one. So they're two very different. So it's like sometimes when you speak onto the celebrity end about what I do, they're not really that interested because it's too, like, the fuck is this clown doing my hair for? He's off doing this other stuff.
But they want to give their opinion. They want to talk to talk.
Well, I think for me, Bill, it's like there's three sides to the story. I'm sure you guys know this, right? There's your side, his side, and the actual story, right? So I think that's what's going on at the moment. And I think that the narrative is very mixed up. And it's the same with the job I do when I'm doing hair, because when you walk in there, because of where I'm from, it's like I let that get into my head as you're from there, so therefore you must be this. So that's why I translate it into the kids, because when you work with celebrity, it can be a little bit tricky. Like, you know, one of the celebrities work with amazing, super, super compassionate. But there's other ones out there are not that as compassionate.
Let me ask you a question. Like, how did you go from being a regular hairstylist to doing celebrities? Well, who was the first one whose hair did you do first that caught everybody's attention and they wanted their hair cut by you?
I can't speak out of bed.
What?
I can't speak out of bed.
Pants, what?
I can't speak well out of bed. It's like, I can't tell, you know what I mean? I can't do names because there's a whole, like...
Okay, yeah. you can't, but, all right, so...
It just sort of happened. It wasn't me. It was like I was working in Dublin. I was working on a certain film. Someone took me in there to do some work. Someone saw the work that I was doing. They wanted me to go to London. Then I get an agent in London, and then the agent in London, they have a portfolio. The portfolio goes out, and then they see what I do.
You specialize in men or women?
Whatever I can get paid for.
But you must have had one cut that made it. That
none whatsoever. What it is, Mark, is like, look, for me, it's all about how you enter the room, right? So it's like you can be the most brilliant hairdresser or the best stylist, but the wrong attitude, right? Uh-huh. So it's like sometimes you can't move forward. So sometimes I'm like the worst hairdresser, or I got a good attitude.
No, the reason why I ask you this is because, like, look, Jennifer Aniston had that haircut. Whoever did that stylist blew up overnight. Like, that became the most.
I never had that.
I thought maybe you had one of those moments where you had somebody that you were grooming that was really. And do you do clothes too?
No. I mean, normally on set, it's normally like, can he really do hair? Does he know what he's doing? That's what I normally hear.
Is there a particular era that you're really good at, or you can do all of them? Like, if you're doing a movie and it's a period piece, you have to adjust, right? Obviously.
For me, it's like YouTube is an amazing tool now. So I'll look at that and I'll figure out before I go to the job what they look like. And then I'll go, oh, that's what they do. And then sometimes I'll go on YouTube now. I'll see people doing their hair at home and copy what they do, and I go to do the person. Wow. So I'm visual, because I was never really trained. You know what I'm saying? So I figured out visually what to do. Yeah.
And then, like, if you're in New York City, I remember when I was a kid, I had a tail. That, you know what? It wasn't fashionable. Like, nobody knew about this thing yet.
Yeah.
But we started it here.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we used to cut our hair short, really curly on top, and then have these long tails. I painted my, I still
like a mullet.
A mullet. No. That was before the mullet. I'm talking about a rat tail right back here. Not the whole mullet, just the rat tail. And that was when you were into hip hop, if you were into break dancing.
That's what I was into
when I was a kid. So the next thing you know, once it caught on, everybody started doing it all over the country. They wanted these those rat tails.
No, I haven't created anything yet.
My point was a lot of it comes from like this urban area. So when you're walking around, I'm sure you're seeing things that, like, you know, you could bring to the set, right?
No, I'd never bring it to set, trust me.
James, would you do if you met the guy who styled Mark's hair? What would you do to him?
I'd ask him for a haircut.
You know what? You know what's funny
He's actually done a good job. It's not bad. It looks good. Did you cut it or did someone else cut it?
No, I go to these barbers over here, right? Well, actually, I have a place in the city that I go to. I should mention them. Carlo Marco. It's on Waverly.
23rd?
No, it's on Waverly. Oh, Waverly. When I was a cop, I was working the Halloween parade. And I come around the corner, and, you know, when you're a cop, you're looking for, you know, free booze, whatever. You know, you want to hang out. You want to party just like everybody else. So I'm looking around. And so I find this stylist place, and there's somebody dressed like Jane Mansfield.
Yeah,
it was a guy.
Right.
So I'm like, hey, what's up? What's going on? You guys having a party? Mind you, I'm in full uniform right now. Like, you guys having a party? And he goes, yeah. He goes, what do you want? You want a beer? You want some wine? So next thing you know, I'm hanging, and they invite. You know, they said you got to come back and get a haircut. So the first time I went back. Bill, I got it on the arm, but then I wanted to come back again because they cut my hair so well that I said, you know what? I don't want it for free anymore. I want to pay for it. Respect you guys. And then I've been going there for years.
Amazing.
Sometimes I get my hair cut in the barber too. Right. And those guys.
Like Jane Mansfield too when you go there?
No, those guys are Dominican. Those guys are Dominican guys, they can do the sides. Perfect. The back, perfect. They can shape up your beard. But if you have straight hair on top, they don't know what to do. They got to call a conference. I see them all in the corner. Mira, pero dímelo, ¿qué pasa aquí? Like, they're talking about my hair. Like, how do you, they're calling up watching YouTube. Just like
me on YouTube. Let me straight in there.
Cut straight hair. We don't know what the fuck to do with straight hair because everybody comes in there, has an afro.
And Mark,
they're tight knit.
Have you seen Pat's face in the last 10 minutes?
Where is he?
I don't know what the fuck to say or think. We gotta pull him back in. Just when he was out, we pulled
him back. Where are you? We lost you, man. You want to hit something? Go ahead, hit something, man.
Yeah, I lost the video.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You're back.
I'm back. You see me?
Yeah,
Bill. See you.
All right, that's all that counts.
Yeah, Bill.
What you got on the? What's on the background? The sports? You watching the sports, Pat?
No, I'm in a conservatory. I have a conservatory.
Okay. Yeah. No, I can see the reflection on the back there, just on the behind.
Wait a minute. Wait. We got, what the fuck? What just happened right now? Pat's at a conservatory? First of all, Pat has some business that I don't even know what it is. What is it? Construction?
No,
then he's got a...
Oxtails.
What?
I have a wholesale food distributor.
Okay, you got a wholesale food distributor. Then you're involved in the boxing, and out of nowhere, you got a conservatory. What are they playing? Chamber music in the back? Somebody's like, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? You got a conservatory.
Yeah, yo,
it's a conservatory.
I didn't even know there was a conservatory in Staten Island. Where is this conservatory in Staten Island?
In Tottenville, Staten Island.
So what's in there?
It's just a glass room where to hang out.
Oh, I thought you meant you had a whole.
James, tell them what a conservatory is.
I don't know.
A glass house.
I know you got them in London. It's modeled after London.
Yeah, excuse me, Pat. I'm in the basement apartment here in the Bronx. All right. I don't know what the fucking conservatory is.
He's got 50 employees for his food distributorship. So that's why he's living in the conservatory there.
Hey, Pat, speaking of that, I need a job, man.
You got a CDL?
Not yet. I should have got it when I was on the job. I could have get it for free. They gave me a book this freaking big, though. I was on vacation. I'm like, I'm going to read it.
It's a difficult test.
What's the CDL? What is that? Your kids keep talking about a CDL.
Commercial driver's license in order to drive a truck.
I just got my license in November. I never had a license before.
Really?
My driver's license. Yeah.
Do you drive in New York?
Hell no. I done my test in Red Hook, but I never drove here. I never drove anywhere. I used to just cycle my bike and walk everywhere.
Where are you staying now?
Downtown Brooklyn, just by the Barclays Center. Fort Greene, just by Flushing Avenue and then Lafayette. Just right on the corner there.
Have you been to Barclays?
I haven't. I'm not a sportsman. I've never been to it. Like, my dad beat it out of us because he loved it so much it made us all hate it. So I never played soccer, no football, no handball.
But it's a wonderful venue if you get the chance, especially for boxing. It was really made for boxing and basketball. It's better to see a boxing match there than in Madison Square Garden, I believe.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, because you get to see the whole... Okay. But it's more...
It's built kind of up instead of spread out. So you're on top of the ring.
Do you remember a guy called Mr. B, Barry Addison? He used to look after Buddy McGirt. He was like a bodyguard for him.
No.
Remember him?
No.
Mark Breland.
Mark Breland is a Brooklyn.
Yeah, him and Mark Breland were good friends. I'm friends with Mr. B, so he's so him and Buddy were like that, and Mark. I met Mark through Mr. B. Huh?
Whatever happened to Mark Breland?
He's still training. He's still training.
He trains Deontay Wilder, who just looks like he's going to get rid of him, which is a shame because I thought Mark made the right call.
Yeah, went through a hard time, right? Deontay last year, did he go through a bit of a thing last year? He wasn't well. Was it last year?
Well, Deontay lost to
Fury.
Help me out. Yeah.
Fury. Tyson Fury.
Yeah, he just lost to Tyson Fury.
Well, what do you mean he made the right call? What call?
Well, Deontay was kind of catching a beating.
You mean stopping the fight?
Yeah, Mark stopped the fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought he saved him. From himself, because Deontay's a tough guy. I think he would have stayed in there and he would have took a lot of unnecessary punishment.
Deontay has one of the most powerful punches that the world's ever seen. But the reality, you know, Tyson is a master boxer. You know what I'm saying? And he figured out cutting him off and getting in his grill, because at the end of the first fight when they fought. And he got knocked down the second time. When he got up, he went after him. Mm-hmm. And then he realized he backpedals. He doesn't know what to do. So that's what he did that fight. And it was over.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, Matt, do you ever get guys that come to your gym and they want to be like mixed martial artists?
I do. I get a few. And a lot of the mixed martial artists come to us to learn how to box.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's completely different stand-up.
Yeah,
to grappling.
The point for a mixed martial artist is the boxing. They're usually good at wrestling and jujitsu, and then they lack in the boxing a lot of times.
Yeah, David Branch actually came to us to learn how to box.
I can't wait till your place is opened up, and you got guys going to the gloves. That's going to be great, man.
Yeah. You know, we got a kid going to the Olympics too, James. I don't know.
Get out of here! No way.
Yeah, he's going to. He's a Brooklyn kid. started boxing in the gym, never boxed before, and he's going to be a 2021 Olympian in
what
Tokyo.
What part of Brooklyn is he from?
From Brownsville.
Oh, he's from Brownsville. Yeah. I'm not in Brownsville a lot. What's the kid's name?
Bruce Harrington. If you get a chance, if you Google Brownsville born, they just did a documentary on him.
Oh, get out of here.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Bruce Harrington.
Carrington with a C.
Okay, Bruce.
Carrington.
Oh, that's great.
James, you were talking about that you do modeling for the kid with the kids.
No, it was like we put a fashion show on inside this prison,
right.
Prison in Orange County where a friend of mine works for ASICS. She's like the lead designer.
Right.
And she wanted to do something in human trafficking, and I met this girl who worked in human trafficking, and so 2 years later, I put them together, and then we came up with this show that we ran inside the prison. But the kids were the models inside the prison.
Yeah, so, that's my point. I would love, because we just had a kid that they discovered him. I'm not sure who it was. Maybe Versace or somebody discovered him from his boxing Instagram page.
Okay, and
they picked up on the look he's got, and right now he's in Italy. He's walking the runway in Italy.
Fantastic.
His name is Alex Chaparro.
I think I know Alex. Yeah,
S-H-A-P.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth, because if you ever see when you get a chance, go on our Instagram page, NYC Cops and Kids.
Oh,
and
okay.
Your kids, they're just real good looking. They're tough kids, but they're good looking kids. I think they'd make wonderful models. A lot safer than boxing.
I think that's a great photo shoot.
Well, let me know, Pat, and I'll go down. I'll meet you down there.
Oh yes, absolutely. I think anybody, like especially like an Adidas, would love to have them as a.
But a friend of mine has just gone to Under Armour now. She's working out in Baltimore.
Yeah, they just got the perfect bodies, just a boxing bottle.
They're all
built beautifully.
Yeah, fantastic. I can get a couple of kids to see it as well out here.
That's a great, and look, Bill, we facilitated this.
See that? Look at that.
when it's on the New York Times, and this is a bestseller, this book.
We're going into so many different fields, you know?
I know. I can't wait to see the show. There's going to be a runway show.
Yeah.
At Barclays.
So can't find you. Okay. I got carried away. I thought I was Michael Jackson for a minute.
And then Mark, in 5 years, you moved now to the Bronx with a conservatory.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm in that basement apartment.
You learn stuff new every day.
Get some million, a million audience per month.
You know, it's funny. You know, uniting the two worlds here. I did the first show I ever had on TV was Della Ventura, Danny Aiello's TV show. I played a boxer, and we had to shoot some scenes in Gleason's gym in Brooklyn.
Oh, very good.
And I remember there was this kid there, and they put me in the ring with him. His name was Tyson. It wasn't Mike Tyson, but his name was Tyson. And you know, I had to explain to this kid.
That guy who owns the chicken company.
No. This was some black kid from Brooklyn, man. He was big, man. He was a heavyweight. Super heavyweight like me, but I had explained to him in between takes that, you know, we're acting right now, right?
Don't fuck me up.
I gotta show you the footage, man. This kid was big, man. And so there you go. I combined the two worlds, Bill. See that?
There you go. Look at that.
So Pat, how do you, when a kid comes to you, how do you get him involved in boxing if he's not that type, or you know, he wants to just get off the street? What do you do for a kid like that?
Well, believe it or not, probably 10% of the kids in the program actually box competitively. The other kids are there just to be in a positive, good place. Kids that just want to get off the street and be around people that they see on Instagram that are doing that are winning the Golden Gloves, that are possibly going to the Olympics. The kids are our best advertisement. The kids posting the accomplishments that they're making in life, and even and we just use the the boxing is a carrot on a stick to get the kids once they're in the program. And I failed to mention probably the most important part of the program. We built the classroom right in the facility. And it's evolved into, it's not just a classroom for the SATs or the Regents. It's become like a career path classroom where the kids to take every civil service test. We teach them how to get through that whole process.
Well, amazing. That's brilliant.
Yeah. A lot of kids end up becoming police officers. That's probably why we have a great NYPD boxing team, because mm-hmm. the kids came through the program.
Now, Pat, so you've got it in two boroughs so far, or just one?
Well, we have two gyms in Staten Island, and we have the one in Brooklyn. But it's our ultimate goal, and the police commissioner, I think with really his input, and, you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Right. What's going on between the police and the community today? What better program to have in every borough, the city, to build positive relationships between the cops and the kids.
I agree.
Pat, you're definitely a positive guy. I mean, I'm old and I almost feel like going to your gym.
You're welcome to come. You can teach the kids stand up.
You know, I want to get off the street myself, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a good thing. If you ever want me to come down there and do that, Pat, I'll do
Absolutely. I'll tell you, we did a show one time. Remember the Grand Prospect Hall in Brooklyn?
Oh, I love that commercial. That's my favorite. I watch that commercial once a month just to make me feel good.
Well, our first boxing show we did was in that facility. And I got a local Democrat council member to box against a Republican senator.
Oh, man. Wow.
And I had, believe it or not, I was able to get the late... the referee, who did the Ali Frazier fights? The famous referee.
His son is a referee now, right?
Yes, his son is a referee. That's, I'm drawing a blank.
Me too, but I know who you're talking about.
Well, I got, he ended up reffing three Ali Frazier, the three bouts.
Amazing,
wow. And I had Jackie Mason. Now that was my point. Jackie Mason was the MC,
uh-huh.
and he did a whole stand-up routine, and he had the place on their knees crying.
Grand Prospect Hall, we make your fantasies come true. That's my favorite commercial.
You know, his name is Mr. Halkius.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I love those. It's a great commercial. That commercial stands the test of time. I'll put it up against anything. Grant, if you're home and you're not from New York, look it up. The Grand Prospect Hall on YouTube, the commercial. It's great.
Were you in it?
What?
No, he's coming down the big gold staircase, him and his wife.
Himself, he does that a lot on
the
show.
No, you never saw that. You never saw the commercial, Bill?
No.
It was on TV all the time.
Well, I probably
grew up with that commercial.
It might ring a bell, you know?
And, you know, when I was in a story when we were growing up, we were always, like, debating where we should go. And then somebody would go, why don't we go to the Grand Prospect? It was a thing. We love the commercial.
I got to look at it later. I've just written it down. Very good.
It's classic. It's classic.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah. I watch it all. Like I said, I watch it all the time.
God, I'm getting some good tips tonight. I have Bruce Carrington, Alex Shapiro, and now the Grand Prospect Hall. I'm going to have homework at the end of this.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that Bruce Arrington. Is Arrington or Carrington?
Carrington.
C-A-R-R.
Yeah. Bruce Carrington. That's great.
Now, Pat, your food dispensary. What is it called? It's a food...
It's a wholesale food distributor.
Chef's
Choice.
You have 50 employees, right?
I do, yes.
And are they all from the neighborhood?
They are, yeah.
So if I said, how is Pat 80%. As a boss, would they say, hey, he's cool.
They say he's too easy.
Too easy.
He's too easy, yeah, he's got to get it.
Gives people days off easy, right?
Yeah. My it was my father's business. When I retired, He handed me the keys, and that was the last time he saw the place. And I know why, because it's probably easy to get shot at being a cop than running a business in New York City.
That's nice what you said. It's true.
Running a business in New York City, you can't imagine how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm. Especially now as well, but what's going on at the moment?
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Especially for the food business as well, though.
Thank you. We were essential, so we never closed. We were lucky. We never closed. But I'm a wholesale too. So right. I watched probably half of my restaurants went out of business.
Yeah.
They have no business. If they didn't have takeout and delivery, they were done. I'm not sure how long their landlords could carry them not paying any rent.
Yeah. Because we were talking about that today with someone, and seemingly they're not, no one's being evicted at the moment, right?
No, they put a moratorium on evictions.
Okay, wow. I mean, that's got to be tough as well. I mean, no business, people not being able to pay rent. I mean, what's going to happen next? It's tough.
Well, they just opened it up 25%, and they're keeping the outdoor dining. Like, everybody's going to have to get
the heaters.
Warm the heaters. Yeah. That's if you own a business right now that has heaters, man, you're gonna do well.
Yeah, there you go.
Because these places
are expensive to use too. That propane isn't cheap.
I know, but how long are you going to be able to eat outside in New York weather? Heaters or no heaters, you're not going to be able to eat outside. They got to open it up.
Well, Pat,
I was just in Florida and everything's open. Restaurants were open full capacity.
That day we had lunch down in Tribeca. All I smelled was fumes.
Yeah.
Right? You're sitting at a table in the street and it's like you got an exhaust pipe pumping nice fresh air into your mouth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we done that on Sunday. That's all we had on Sunday. We're just eating it.
Yeah, you got to drink more, man.
Who? Bill? Yeah. Bill?
Everybody, when you're eating out, just drink.
No, hell no. I can only have one a day.
So this makes it go away.
So listen, I've never been in a fight. I only drink one bottle of Guinness a day and that's it.
You've never been in a fight, huh?
Ever.
Yeah. I've been in a lot of fights, man.
No, never.
When I was
run pretty quick.
Pat will tell you. It was just like the thing you did. You stood on the corner.
Yeah.
You drank until you couldn't see, and then he walked around. What the fuck are you looking at? Like, he's just looking for trouble, man. Every night, and I hated it, man, because I wasn't really a fighter. I'm not a confrontational person, but
yeah,
it was just you didn't want to be called a pussy, like
yeah,
you know.
I love being called a pussy, though.
In my neighborhood, if you want to, like, put it this way, we used to hang out. We used to wear t-shirts and leather jackets, and it was so cold you could put your beer, your 40, in the fucking snow just to melt it, either so to keep it warm. That's how cold it was. And the first one to go home was like, what the fuck is wrong with you, bro? Yo, he's a fucking pussy, bro. What a fucking pussy. Oh, you got to study? What do you want to get an A? You know, that was...
What, do you want to be somebody when you get older?
Yeah, look, this kid wants to be smart. He's going to go home and read. That was my neighborhood, man.
I grew up in a similar one, Martha, but that's the thing, but it's how you look at it, right? You can either jump in and you can fall into it. You just go, yeah, I'm a pussy.
I kept it very cold.
I'm freezing. I'm going home.
Exactly. I'll see you then. I'm out.
I got a fireplace.
I'm actually going home to have some pussy. What's wrong with that? It's like, what do you do? You call me as much as you want, but I'm going home to get some. I'll see you later.
Yeah. I wish we were smarter than that, man.
In Ireland, it's always cold and damp, too, right?
It's cold and damp, yeah. It's freezing. It gets into your bones. It's awful.
As they say, they go to Ireland for the weather, right?
But I was just looking at these pictures the other day. These are old images from where I grew up, and I'll show you now what it was like in the 80s. And I mean, it was pretty bad. You guys keep talking. I'm gonna find something now. I'll show you now.
No, we're gonna wait for you. No, wait.
We have nothing else to talk about, so we're going to talk.
How do we keep the camera focused on
James? Oh, my God. Don't be putting this pressure on me.
Well, so look, James, I didn't bring up before, but my daughter's a hairstylist.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, she loves it. She specializes in bridal parties.
Oh, amazing. Well, she's talented. I can't do any of that. But it's like, for me, it's like I've always got away with it. So if someone comes in the ass or something and I don't know how to do it, I'll talk to Melvin and say, that's not going to work. And I'll be so focused that they'll end up going, oh, maybe he's right. You're thinking, no, he's talking about, that's not going to work. So it's like, for me, it was like, it was always a play on words to get what I could do and know what I do to the best of my knowledge, right? Instead of pretending that I could do it, right? So, but a lot of these guys that when they get into it, it's like, yeah, there's some talented people out there. I'm not one of those people when it came to hair, but I knew how to move in situations, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say.
Hey, you're full of shit, man. I'm sure you're very good at what you're doing.
No, trust me. I'll send you.
Just being up modest.
No, listen. It's like the pussy games. I just tell the truth.
Part of being a groomer is that people just
look
around because they like you.
Look. So I was like, that's the type of area I grew up in. And that's what we woke up. There was always burning cars.
A lot of alcohol around.
Look.
That was Northern Ireland?
No, that's Dublin.
Dublin.
That's what Dublin was like in the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I was telling you about the 80s over here with the and the music over here. It was insane over here in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody got robbed. So many people got robbed. They didn't even call it getting robbed. You got mugged.
You think it's coming back like that again? You think it's going to be like that in the next few months?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's already here. You know what the funny thing is everybody keeps saying, oh, there's so many crazy people outside right now, so many homeless, crazy people. I'm like, it's the same amount. Oh, wait, James. Where'd you go, James?
James, you got to re-up your iPad. Pat, what do you think about that? I mean, you got a son on the job. You're in the belly of the beast, right where your business is. Well, how do you see the city?
No, it's definitely because of the lack of enforcement for quality of life issues. Yeah. And the quality of life issues, well, we know it. We live through it. Lead to bigger problems.
Right.
Like we stopped enforcing like the barbecues. Remember the barbecues?
Yeah.
That we used to have to go out there and shut them down at 11 o'clock at night, which if you were their neighbors, was pretty reasonable, 11 o'clock at night. Well, we don't do that anymore. And what happens at a barbecue in Brooklyn when you're drinking all night and now it's 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And now guys are all carrying guns again.
Yeah,
because they're really not afraid to carry guns. And what happens? We're getting all the shootings that we're having. That's the reason for the uptick in shootings this summer.
Well, Pat, I remember going to Comstat meetings, and Chief Anamone would always say, "What are you guys doing about those dice games?" And you know, he was right, but people would think, "Oh, dice game is harmless." It's harmless till they start drinking and someone starts losing. And
then they start
losing, right? So those dice games aren't so harmless after a while. It's the same thing as barbecues till 3 a.m, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The 1-year-old kid that got shot at like 2 or 3 a.m, wasn't it?
Yeah, Trope Street. On Trope. Yeah.
And it was really early in the morning. Like, what was a 1-year-old doing out?
Yeah, but that's a question you can't ask.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of questions you can't ask.
Cultural, I never had my son out at 1 a.m. yet to a bar.
You can't ask that question, though.
Yeah.
Because if you do, now you're in a big world of shit right now. Because what are you trying to insinuate? But the truth is, why are you out? Why is your child out at that time of the night?
But when you go into the communities, because now I'm speaking for my coworkers, the last thing that they say we need right now is less cops. I'm just telling you what my coworkers and what the kids in the gym say. We need more cops. I don't know whose idea, who's the brain trust behind
Listen,
defunding the cops.
That whole idea.
Because who's going to get seriously impacted the most? The people in Brownsville and they want the quality of life enforcement too. Just imagine you got to get up to go to work early in the morning and the kids are outside smoking pot and drinking and blasting the radio.
Pat, that whole idea backfired, by the way. Minneapolis is, they're all saying, yeah, I know what it really entailed.
But how many people had to get killed in that? Well, what was the cost of that?
And look defund the police. Defund the police, right? I work in a program at the police academy, how to handle mental illness as an actor. I'm the only guy who was on the job there. Everybody else is an actor. The clinicians, it got defunded. Those cops that worked in our program, they're working on something else in training right now. Or maybe they're in the street. But the only people that got defunded was all the actors, all 12 of us, and all the clinicians, all 12 of them. Yeah. Those are the people that got defunded. So the whole thing is absurd.
And believe me, I'm not a right-wing nutcase. I'd rather have kids in the boxing program than be locking them up. But there has to be consequences for bad behavior, or else you're just going to continue to have bad behavior.
But still, I think you have to have a balance as well, right? Because sometimes
absolutely. That's why I'm saying.
For me, it's like when I'm out in the community, half it is that there's no dialogue anymore. So it's like it's either us against them or them against us. But then, how do you find a narrative in between that? One is boxing, but then I think you need to find other ways through that as well. Because the conversation really needs to be had, right? So it's like, you know, without that conversation, it's like, well, you're going to have one group going, fuck you, da, da, da. Then you've got the other ones who are like suffering trauma from hearing that. So then how do you help them to deal with that trauma of the abuse? But then the ones, how do you heal their trauma of throwing the abuse from what they've been through over years and what they've been generationally told?
Well, you know, Pat said the last time he was on the show, he said something pretty profound. He said, you have all these professional athletes and all of these Hollywood people, and all they do is criticize. Mm-hmm. But he says, okay, you criticize. You're right. It's fucked up. Now, how are we going to solve this? Going to sit at the table and come up with a solution? Or are you just a negative Nancy, whatever they call you?
Yeah, right? Exactly. You're
going to sit at the table, and that's Pat. He's a problem solver. Mm-hmm.
And that's my point is like, and I always, Colin Kaepernick, you took a knee. All right. You said there's a problem, but could you imagine if I had the name that Colin Kaepernick has to raise funds, to put a program in the Bronx, to put a program in Harlem? Use that notoriety that you got, that you have out of being this great football player, and use it for good. You come up with solutions.
The socks with the pigs on it doesn't help anybody.
No.
It doesn't. If it opens up a conversation, okay, let's talk, but nobody wants to talk. And you know, you're using a perfect example because that guy was offered plenty of times to play professionally again. And he flaked every single time. He doesn't want to play again. He uses that every once in a while. He's exactly what he's supposed to be right now, an antagonist. There's no solution. There's no let's get to the table, work. How do we work with the communities? What is it that you want us to do better? Sit down, talk to us. Nothing. It's just about anarchy, and it's about overturning, changing the way we do things in this country. So that's it. That's it. They're trying to bring a different type of... So let's see. I mean, you know, people vote. And whatever it is, I'm going to fall into place because that's what I do. That's my job. I just want to tell jokes. I want to have fun. I'm not, this whole thing is fucking crazy right now. I want cops to stop fearing for their lives when they go to work. I just want everybody to be happy. So let's do it, man. Whatever it takes.
Well, Pat, who's the new community affairs chief in Brooklyn?
Jeff Madry, yeah. So,
He's from
Brownsville.
Right? He's from Brooklyn. Well, yeah,
he's New York, Brownsville.
As they used to say in the neighborhood, he made his bones in Brownsville.
Yeah, I know him.
Perfect guy for that job, right?
Yeah. No, I, I, You want to know the truth? I think they're grooming him to be the PC.
I worked with him a couple of times. I've done comedy shows in Brooklyn, at least three of them. One at the Barclays, as a matter of fact, that he was there. I don't know him personally, but he knows who I am. I know who he is. You know, he always tells me how funny I am. And he's very, yeah, he's definitely part of the community there. He's definitely.
He's the perfect guy at the perfect time for the chief of community.
Because he has that lady in there now, who took over his role. What's her name? Max
Henderson, Chief Henderson.
Not, Chief Henderson, exactly.
Yeah. She, I met her just recently. She seems like a very nice, competent person.
Yeah, I met her at a church give out. She was there was a church giving out in East New York, and she showed up. I mean, she sounded like super sweet.
Oh, she's good. And Madry's a cop too. He's not just a community affairs guy.
He's the 75th, right?
He knows how to do police work. Yeah.
Yeah, the 75th. He was at, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
And
well, that's good. Cause a lot of times, community affairs are known as like the hug squad. You know.
Yeah.
And they just hug people, and they sort of deny that there's guys out there doing the dirty work that make it possible for these guys to hug people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's no more anti-crime. There's another reason guns are running rampant, you know? I was a big provider. I mean, I loved it. I was in anti-crime for 6.5 years.
They all get pushed off the street now, though. I see Walter will...
That's what's making me sick, that you got these elected officials that are talking about that the cops are under a slowdown. He should join Walter's page, see how many guns they're coming in with every day.
They're getting guns.
Yeah, no, they're coming up with the guns. You know what I like is they're doing more precision policing. They're letting the cops go out there and target that 1% that destroy every community. And well, they're going after them and they're catching them with guns.
Look at Rick Moranis, the actor from... Honey, I Shrunk.
I didn't see that.
Well, he was walking down the street. He's a 67-year-old man, by the way. He's walking down the street. He gets punched out of nowhere by somebody. And then the next thing you know, there's a perfect picture of that guy coming out of the subway. So that's police work right there. You get the picture of him coming out the subway. You get him walking down the block, same clothes, same match. It's the freaking guy. Why he punched this guy in the, who knows? You know, but that's police work right there. Because you always wondered, how are they going to catch this guy?
Well, Mark, how much you want to bet when he's arrested, he's got a rap sheet about 10 pages long?
That's a perfect segue. Look, start following the chief of detectives, Ronnie Harrison's NYPD. Follow their Twitter pages because they're posting all the great work that's being done out there by the cops. They're posting all the gun collars and they're ending every tweet with the perps previous arrested, on probation, on parole, common denominator. In other words, the police are doing their job. It's the system that's really not following through on their job. Because
bail reform has been a real horror show for New York City. Yeah.
You know, Bill and I talk about this all the time. They kept the foot on the pedal for too long with that stop, question, and frisk. And that was a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Part of
an activity report where you had to have 5 a month, that killed everything. And that was on the Bloomberg, by the way. Because at that point right now, you had 300 homicides a year. What are you going to do? You're in a city of 8 million. 300 people are going to die. You got to take the foot off the pedal. And we knew that, unfortunately, that because everybody always blames the cops. You're only as good as the administration. They pretty much dictate what we're going to do. And if they want the numbers and they're putting pressure, you're putting pressure on the cops. Now it's a different job. Now these guys have a different pressure from the community.
That was caveman policing. Just go out there. That you're making 250s.
I know.
Activity report.
Believe me, I knew it when I had to do it 5 250s a month. I didn't understand what we were doing right now.
No, that's caveman policing. That was bad administration because they were up against last year's numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't run the police department.
No, like no, that's my point. It's bad administration. Instead of the one anti-crime team that comes in and locks up that one guy for pattern burglary that shuts down probably 30 burglaries because the guy was going to project it to do another 30 burglaries as opposed to the bullshit five guys in a GLA. And on his activity report, he looks like a star because he's got five felonies.
Hmm. Well, Pat, if you ever read
that one burglary pattern that was shut down.
If you ever read the book by Bill Bratton called Take Back?
I loved it. One of my favorite books because I lived it.
But he also spoke about once you had lowered crime to a certain level, you had to do other things like more community outreach.
Yeah, 100%.
And you can't constantly have your foot on the gas pedal. You had to take your foot off a little bit and always reducing it. Once it came to a certain level, you can't, you know, because look, people were coming home from work and they were getting tossed. They're getting stopped. Yeah. Good people are getting stopped two or three times a day. You're like, you're stopping the wrong people, you know? And I was an anti-crime guy, man. I was a big proponent of
crime. Yeah, I know, but you were an anti-crime guy. I really didn't like the street crime units because they were coming into a command where they really didn't know the community.
Right.
And they usually were coming in because you had an uptick in violence in a particular area. But
in fact,
I just
didn't like
them.
The whole philosophy behind street crime was to send them somewhere for 2 weeks, have them turn the precinct upside down and have them get the hell out of there.
Yeah, not 2 months.
You know?
We always talk about this. And the truth is like, you know, the cops are, the police department's a pawn. It's used whenever necessary and for deflection. And it happens all the time. Everybody hates the police right now. And, you know, it's when I came on the job, everybody hated the police. And then it got nice after 9/11. That didn't last too long. But the crime went down and people started being able to do different things in the city, like go wherever you want. The COVID right now messes everything up because everybody thinks there's so many different crazy people and homeless. It's the same amount. It's just that there's no people out there.
They're more visible, yeah.
Yeah.
So if this guy who has to punch somebody in the face every other day, usually he's got about 100,000 people to pick from, mm-hmm. You know? Now he's got three because he's on Madison Avenue and nobody's walking down there.
Yeah, but when he gets collared, he's going to be out in a couple of hours.
That's the one thing. It's like there's no tourist in the city.
I remember when transit used to do those transit sweeps. There was no one on the street. Transit would sweep everyone out of that subway system. And you're like, holy shit, there's no one in the subways, you know? But it worked. It worked.
You know, yeah, well, listen, in the commercial areas in the city, there's nobody going into the buildings anymore because they're working from home mostly. And maybe they come in once a week. And when you get into Lexington and Park and Madison, those were all commercial areas in the Midtown. And it's desolate, man. There's nobody there, especially on the other side of where Times Square is and stuff like that. Yeah. There's nobody out.
Yeah. I was there last week. It was empty. It's sad.
It's sad.
I don't know what's going to happen to the commercial real estate market, especially office space is going to plummet. And that's a tremendous tax base. In the city.
Pat, everyone hates landlords till they realize how much taxes they pay, you know? And when the landlord's tax money's not around anymore, people aren't going to hate the landlords anymore.
Yeah, no, it's a major problem that the mayor seems to poo-poo, but he's crazy.
What a buffoon. How that guy, you know, I blame it on the electorate. The electorate elected that buffoon twice, you know? Anyone here vote for him?
No, I can't vote. I'm not from here, so I'm good.
I think the problem is that nobody votes. Everybody complains and nobody goes out and votes.
Yeah. No, that's true. But then if you look at, I mean, what sort of game is your man playing at the moment with this COVID thing as well? But the ruckus this is and the hysteria it's going to cause now, because he's going to come out and go, oh, look, I'm fine. COVID's not that bad. It's going to be.
Well, he's not over yet. I don't understand why he's saying I'm going to beat this and lick this. You know what? Write it out. Shut your mouth right now, because you don't know. It affects everybody differently. And, you know, Walter Reed might send him home, but you're still in a situation right now where you got to be very careful. You know, you're in that age group where it could affect you and it could turn. I've read stories about it turning overnight. So
there's a lot of people that were given a clean bill of health and have bad symptoms down the road from it, even after they were cured of it, you know?
Yeah, it's an odd thing. Nobody seems to, like, you know, no matter what you hear, you never get, I'm never satisfied. Like, I don't think anybody's really knows what the hell's going on. Some people test positive, they get no symptoms. Some have symptoms, but it's light. And other people, it affects, like, it just destroys them. So there's no rhyme or reason to it.
No, there's no rhyme, because I've been tested 4 times and all the way through COVID, I never stayed at home. And nothing, and I have no antibodies. I've been on the train. I was on the trains at the beginning.
I think, you know what? Your immune system will take care of itself. I think the worst thing you can do, you know, I have a joke that, you know, it's not a joke, but just amongst my friends, we know somebody that their wife bought him a dog. He's like, he's in his 80s. And the guy, God bless the guy. He got a younger wife back in the day. And she doesn't look that bad for being in her 60s. But now we're thinking she probably wants to get rid of it. She bought him a dog. So this guy in his 80s walking a dog, and I think the guy's getting stronger because his body's working. He's fighting off all those things. He doesn't realize. If you would have just kept him in the room by himself, and bring in a delivery boy every once in a while just to drop the food off inside, he would have been dead. But he's going out there every day. His body's working. It's fighting off all these fucking things that he's facing.
I think James drinking his one Guinness a day, but
that's the cure. It's not drinking bleach, it's drinking a Guinness a day. That's it.
With his Sambuca Romano with the 3 beans. That's the cure.
That is the cure. Oh my god. Oh no, I love my Guinness.
How do you keep it one Guinness? I don't get that. It's gotta be a really big Guinness though, right? What do you gotta, like, we do one keg of Guinness a day?
Not just one sip, like literally one bottle a day, that's it. I'll just sip on it for about an hour and a half. That's it.
An hour and a half.
Yeah. Oh,
I wish I could do that, man.
No, but it was like, you know, Ireland is stigmatized about being a bunch of alcoholics. I never drank in my life. There was only one person that drank in my family, and that was it. My dad, no one else drank. The same on my mom's side, it was 13 kids and
13 no alcohol. Kids? Holy shit.
Yeah, 12 girls, one boy. Can you imagine the boy?
Oh, my God. Probably get the shit out of him.
No, he was sent off to the Merchant Navy at 15. And that was it. You're out of here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oops, sorry. Yeah, no, so I never touched this stuff.
So I think what we came to the conclusion tonight was there's a photo shoot that's going to be in the – that's going to go
in the boxing gym.
That's going to go into it's going to turn out to be a book, a coffee table book. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be all the boxes from Pat Russo's place there, the brand new place in Brooklyn in Staten Island.
And Matt's going to find the funding. Mark is going to do the writing. Bill's going to do the sales. And I'm going to do the pictures. Fantastic. We've got a great team here.
And then with your photographs, you have to have all the celebrities sign them.
Hell no.
And you cutting their hair in the background, you know?
So, like, get this.
I think that's a great idea, man. I think any exposure that we can get to the program and expand it. Like, I always wanted to do this thing with the PAL. I wanted to get the celebrities involved. Everybody sponsors a team from whichever borough that you're from. And like Fat Joe from the Bronx and Jay-Z from Brooklyn. And they sponsor a team, and they the cops coach it. And every once in a while, if they can, the celebrities, they'll come to a game. They'll talk to the kids that are on their team. And boxing, Pat is already doing it. I think boxing could lead the way into it. But absolutely. I think it should be
fun. And I'll tell you, we got a wonderful football team with the department. baseball team. We have everything, soccer mm-hmm. team. And I ran that past the PC too, that there should be cops and kids everything. Cops and kids football, cops and kids baseball. No, just to bring the kids together with the cops in a positive setting. And like we said, just to have that conversation.
Wow. You think they'd ever do anything with
cops and kids kind of comedy?
There you
cops
go.
And kids comedy. Let me tell you something. I got a lot of funny kids.
I'm sure.
Well, yeah, listen.
They might not mean to be, but they're funny kids.
You bring me down there. We'll do a I'll teach a class for all the kids that want to do it. Okay. And it'll be something else they can do.
Let me tell you, you give these kids a microphone. You give me a microphone, I want to hit myself in the head with it. But you give these kids a microphone, you can't believe they become stars.
Oh, listen,
they're just naturals.
Some of the best times that I had as a kid was snapping, the dozens. You know, it was just something that was part of school. You come in class, and I hate to say it, but you know, maybe some of the younger kids don't understand it, but a lot of it was about your mother. I never even met your mother, and all of a sudden we're doing your mother jokes. Like, and this is before class starts, and everybody's snapping on each other's mother, and like, we didn't even know each other's mother. Well, they knew my mother, which was bad because my mother was pretty. She was pretty hot. The joke with me was, yo, Mayo, you know, let me get your mother's number. And I would always say that, I live with my mother, so I guess it's my number. You want to call her? That's for me, and I'll put you through. But yeah, the playing the dozens and snapping on each other and busting each other's chops. That's what we did in class, man, in the inner boroughs. You know, that was a thing. The playing the dozens was a thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I have no fucking idea. I grew up in the suburbs.
No. Oh, you never snapped on each other's mothers? Your mama jokes? That was like, every day. Every day. Your mama's so fat or your mama's so ugly. It was always like, it was all. So, yeah. I think you guys, everybody's doing a great job here. Everybody, and everybody's doing well except for me.
Oh, you're doing better than all of us. You're just saying that. You're being humble now. Yeah.
This guy's in the conservatory. You're in some loft in Brooklyn. This guy's in his palatial estates. I'm in a basement apartment in the Bronx. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, right? But what's above the basement, though? That's the question.
What? What'd you say?
What's above the basement? That's the question.
The homeowner's home.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, you think you'll do anything with those kids on the bikes? You think the police would ever do anything with those kids on the pedal bikes?
Do I do anything with those kids? They drive me crazy, those kids. Yep.
What are you talking about?
Really, how scary are them when they come down the block? But how talented are they?
So here's my point, Pat. The reason I'm thinking of it is that so in London, they've done a thing called bike storms. So there's like 5,000 to 6,000 kids, and they have it orchestrated for once a year that they do it. And it's kind of amazing because it's a great time to bond because there's so many. And there has to be structure to it in order for it to work. You understand? So it's like, you have to have dialogue. You have to have conversation. You have to have it with the leaders. Then you have to have where you have to get involved. You don't have a choice but to be involved. So it's like for here, I think it's so all over the place with them. But I think if he had a better narrative, something like that, I think it could be a powerful tool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You have to send me the what they're doing over there. I'd like to look at it.
Yeah. I'll send it to you.
Are you guys talking about
the wheelie kids the on the pedal bikes
and the dirt bikes and all the when they go the through the neighborhood?
Well, they have in Brooklyn. We're currently dealing with both. But I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, the pedal bikes.
Get on the regular bicycles. They just come down the block, popping wheelies.
Because I get some of them sponsored, so I work with a lot of them. So it's like for me, it's like they have a lot of frustrations. Like any kid, when they go to do boxing, it's the same thing. A lot of them are like amazing athletes. So two kids I got sponsored out in Baltimore. I mean, amazingly talented, super humble, but they come from really bad backgrounds. But for some reason, they've locked onto this, and it's changed their character completely. And they're great leaders with the other kids. I just got a kid from the Bronx sponsored. Amazing kid as well. And it's like, it's that sense of freedom where you haven't escaped from a home, and that's what sometimes these kids need. But when so many of them come together, well, then how do you sort of work with that as a benefit, because you have so many?
I think that's the whole thing. I think kids need, the younger people need to get introduced into a whole bunch of things and figure out what you'd like to do. There has to be an opportunity. Once you get excited about doing something, life has a purpose. It's not about this nonsense that's going on, hanging out in the corner. Now there's something, I have a goal. I want to do this. I want to try it. I want to check it out. Whether it's boxing.
But these kids, I mean, these kids do, Mark. I mean, they're like, I mean,
they're gravitating because they're looking for something. And we got to give it to them.
Yeah. It's filling a void as well of not having anything either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I said, Pat, everybody here is doing the right thing. Well, except for Bill. I don't know. Bill, what are you doing?
He's in the suburbs.
They don't have problems in the suburbs. Everything's good.
I'm trying to produce one of the greatest podcasts in the history of the New York City Police Department.
There you go.
Somebody's got to work.
The right partner, though. He told me he was funny. You know.
So yeah, so here we are, man. We're about at the hour. We're actually over the hour. So we want to give us a second here while we just plug our Patreon. If you enjoyed tonight's show and you want to support us here over here at Police Off the Cuff, please check out our Patreon, patreon.com, Police Off the Cuff. We have three different tiers. Bill is going to tell you about them.
The first tier that costs $7 a month is called the Bucket. So if you want to be a bucket, spend $7 a month. The second tier is called Polish My Rack, and that costs $9. And the premier tier is called Dipped in Butter, and everyone likes to dip them in butter, and that costs $11 a month. And Mark and I put on different shows on our Patreon. Mark does a show called One-on-One with Mark DeMeo, and I do a show called Real Crime Stories. And we have detectives that worked some really unbelievable cases, and they tell the story of these cases. And I interview them about these cases. We've had Mike Heinrichs, one of the most highly decorated cops in the history of New York City Police Department. Michael O'Keefe, Tim Muldoon. You know, I could go on and on and on. But every week we're having a great detective come on. Sandy Rubino, I don't want to leave her out. She'll get mad at me. She was a great special victims detective. And they tell these stories from their point of view and from the investigative I just had Kevin Waller on from the National Homicide Squad.
I've had Vicki Cooperman on, fantastic comedian here in New York City, a writer, an actor, and she got robbed at gunpoint right in Midtown recently. So we talked about that. I had Hall. I think it's Hall. Timmy Hall. He's a cop, and he's a retired cop from Baltimore, but he's a tremendous stand-up comic right now, and he's very funny. He's got great cop jokes. And Andrew Singer. Those are the three guests that I've had on. Andrew was a Passaic County sheriff. And midway through the job, he found out that his 3.5-year-old son had meningitis and dealing with that. And it's nothing but love, laughter. And they're very positive stories, all having to do with law enforcement in one way or the other. And so before we part, let's just give a thank you to our guests tonight and see what they got to plug. Pat, we'll start off with you.
Well, New York City Cops and Kids, you go on an Instagram page. It's NYC Cops AND Kids. And please follow us. And if you ever want to make a donation, you can go to our website, nypdboxing.com. There's a donate button there.
Pat, I donated the other day. I hit you with a $50 bill. That's all I can.
Hey, Pat,
that gets you three more appearances.
Pat, I hate to break the news to you, but that was from the both of us.
All right.
James.
I'm going to jump with Pat.
What do you got to part with? What can we plug for you?
Actually, thanks for having me. It was fantastic. Good fun. And I'm going to jump with Pat and get to donate on his page. It's a good one with the boxing and stuff. Fantastic.
Let's see if we can work this thing out where we get these kids and we take photos of them, and it's I see it already in my head. I think it's gonna be a big thing.
So here's what we could do. So we could do, so years ago, I'd done this thing on Union Square with these group of street fighters. They set up a fight club and they used to kick the shit out of each other. They were called the Union Square Spartans. So, but I loved them because that they'd done it for good stuff, not for bad stuff. But anyway, the New Yorker came in, they'd done a piece on them and they tried to label them as something else. So I got pissed off at this because I saw a whole lot of value in them. So I wrote, a friend of mine that had a magazine in London, we redone the whole story. But what we done was we done a Polaroid of the kid. And then on the other side of the notebook, the kid wrote inside the notebook what he'd been through and why he fought and what it was he was, where he wanted to go to through fighting. So we could maybe do something like that where it's like you could teach the kids poetry. And Bill, Pat, you could arrange for the kids to have a portrait done. And then at the end of it, they could do a piece of their story. But then they would have a funny poem at the end of it to go with it so it wouldn't be so somber.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Sounds good.
You know, Pat, we actually really could do a comedy show, and Mark and I could teach the kids and actually have the kids do a show. That would be cool.
I'm telling you right now, they would love it, and I think it would sell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and Mark's a better comic than me. He's been doing it for 23 years. I'm better at everything else in life, but, but he's a better comic than me.
I agree with you. So there you go, man. That's it. This concludes another episode of Police Off the Cuff After Hours. Thank you guys for tuning in once again, and to our guest Pat Russo, right?
He's got the squirrel on his and this is James iPad.
James Moody, Pat Russo. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, man. One Guinness a night. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
That's all I had.
Of all the world's problems with one Guinness.
I'm still got half a bottle left. Look at that, man.
I'll go to my grave saying that all I had tonight was one Guinness. Thank you, guys, man. Thanks a lot.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Bill.